Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'll be reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, November 12th, 2022, with the state and local obituaries, letters to the editor, and Dear Abby. Drilling picks up steam across U.S., Texas, Permian Basin by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity picked up across the U.S., across Texas, and in the Permian Basin during the week. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count it had reported weekly since the 1940s jumped 9 rigs to 779, the highest level since March 2020, and the second consecutive weekly increase. The count is 223 rigs higher than the 556 reported last November. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas also jumped by 9 rigs to 622, the highest since March 2020, and 168 more than the 454 counted a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas held steady at 155 rigs, 53 more than the 102 reported last year. Texas added 4 rigs for 373, 109 more than the 264 at work statewide the previous year. New Mexico held steady at 106 rigs. Louisiana 6 and Ohio 1 joined Texas as producing states to see increases, while Pennsylvania 2 was the only producing state to see a decline. The Permian Basin added 4 rigs for 350, 78 more than the 272 last year. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian, with 62 rigs, down 1 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico followed with 41 rigs, up 1 for the week. Reeves County had 38 rigs, up 1, while Martin County had 36 rigs, unchanged. Midland County added a rig for 31 at work within county lines. Loving County lost 2 rigs for 22 this week, while Howard County added a rig for 19. Glasscock County jumped 3 rigs for 17 this week, while Ward County held steady at 16 rigs for a third week. Upton County lost 5 rigs, the steepest drop of the week, for 14 rigs. Energy-focused software as a service firm, Enverus, said its U.S. rig count rose 1 rig to 888 for the week ended November 9th, down 1% for the month and up 31% in the last year. The only major play with an increase in drilling activity last week was the Gulf Coast, where 2 additional rigs brought the total to 117. Appalachia was flat at 59 rigs, and declines were recorded for the Permian Basin, down 3 to 331, Williston Basin, down 3 to 39, DJ Basin, down 2 to 21, and Anadarko Basin, down 1 to 83. Drilling down on the Gulf Coast, the most active counties are Texas Webb, 17 rigs, and Karnes, 10. In Webb County, EOG Resources is the most prolific driller with 3 rigs, followed by Laredo Energy, Silver Bow Resources, and SM Energy with 2 each. In Karnes County, the most active operators are BP, Devon Energy, Ensign Natural Resources, and Marathon Oil with 2 rigs each. BizBuzz, Cream Lab Creates Happy Moments for Children by Ben Schaefer. Armando Enchondo, owner of Cream Lab N7, said the look on kids' faces when they see nitrogen ice cream being made in front of them is priceless. Nitrogen ice cream is made on-site and in front of the customer at Cream Lab, 3201 Midland Drive, Suite 150. According to Enchondo, nitrogen ice cream has a smoother texture because the freezing process happens faster than traditional ice cream. It's unique. The ice cream is made right in front of you. But if we do, let's say, a strawberry cheesecake ice cream, it's not always going to be the same flavor or texture, Enchondo said. Cream Lab is Enchondo's first venture into the food and restaurant business, which he claims he enjoys and has wanted to get involved in for a while. But Enchondo has found another passion since opening Cream Lab in 2019, creating happy moments for kid customers. He said the young customers who come to the ice cream shop enjoy watching the process of their food being made with liquid nitrogen. Enchondo claimed local youths are a big part of their targeted customers. In addition to being smoother, customizable, and handcrafted, Cream Lab features flavors like strawberry cheesecake, manganada, and dragon's breath, a fruity flavor that comes billowing with a cloud of liquid nitrogen for about 7 minutes. Their menu also features options to create your own flavor: milkshakes, floats, nitrogen ice cream affogato, ice cream with 2 shots of espresso and whipped cream, bubble waffles, and churros. Additionally, according to Enchondo, they will soon add pizza to their menu. "Once we start hitting the cooler weather, it starts going down," said Enchondo, who added the hardest time of the year for an ice cream shop is looming. Still, when the Christmas season comes around, Cream Lab will feature Christmas creations, seasonal flavors available for a limited time. We show you what would be in the new Hogan Park by Stuart Doreen. By now, Midland residents know there is a discussion that will take place about the finances involved with the maintenance and operations of Hogan Park in Northeast Midland. But for all the talk that happened during the recent city council campaigns, there wasn't much about the park, what it is now, and what some hope it could be. Hogan Park is a regional park that is currently home to soccer fields, the Bill Williams Softball Complex, baseball fields, playground equipment, and 2 dog parks. In terms of age, it is a granddaddy of Midland's regional park system, and there are days it shows. Hogan's deterioration led a previous council to commit $10 million in certificates of obligation, non-approved debt, to putting some life into Hogan. It was that $10 million, along with the discussions of a priority Midland Quality of Place committee of volunteers, that led to the ultimate plan for an upgrade that, when completed, will carry a higher price tag than the 2 stadiums at the Scarborough Sports Complex in West Midland. The City of Midland graciously allowed the QOP committee to review the plans for Hogan and suggest design edits and to dream big and pivot the initial city-planned $10 million redo into an epicenter for outdoor recreational life for all Midlanders and visitors to our great city to enjoy and to be paid for mostly with private dollars, according to a Quality of Place Conservancy opinion article that previously appeared in the Reporter-Telegram. In partnership with the city and the design firm hired by the city, QOP added core design elements that include pavilions, food truck lanes, event lawns, innovative play, covered basketball courts, and walking paths, as well as future elements that would be sequenced in as additional funding is made available, such as sand volleyball courts, extended walking trails, additional play turf lawns. Today, the goal is to attempt to explain what Midlanders can expect. The following is a list of what the Conservancy is calling core amenities. They include the Tall City Playground and Pavilion, a splash pad, the main gateway and promenade, a food truck pavilion and event lawn, a large and small dog park, and concessions and restrooms. The athletic recreational opportunities will include 14 turf baseball softball fields, including those that currently make up the Bill Williams Softball Complex, 4 grass baseball fields, 8 batting cages, covered basketball and concession pavilion, an interior trail system. The Quality of Place Conservancy then lists future amenities sequenced as funding is achieved. Those amenities include 5 multipurpose fields, soccer, football, etc., on the park's north end, a north side playground, a north side turf lawn, shaded quad playground and seating, 4 batting cages, 3 sand volleyball courts, and loop trail and extension. Note, upon completion of both trail systems, it will total about 7 miles. Odds and ends about the park include the Great Lawn area in the southeast portion of The park, across from Sibley Nature Center, is roughly the same size as Centennial Park downtown. The Hogan Project covers about 120 acres. As a comparison, Centennial Park in the heart of downtown is about 3.5 acres. The Scarborough Sports Complex, when it was built in 2000 through 2002, was said to be around 100 acres. Several months ago, the Quality of Place Group formed a task force to help think through processes and usage. That task force now includes individual residents, a city council member, city staff, and officials representing club soccer, the local soccer association, football, club baseball, local baseball, and softball. This park is a major construction project that will take time to complete, and the intent is to sequence construction based on funding for amenities and to build in such a way that the construction minimizes impact to areas not currently being worked, so that portions of the park are usable while other areas are under construction. In brief, DPS, Kentucky man dies in Midland County collision, by Mercedes Cordero. A 23-year-old man died Wednesday afternoon in a collision on Farm to Market Road 1788 in Midland County, according to Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Gavin Sexton of Jenkins, Kentucky, was driving a 2019 Nissan Altima north on FM 1788 and approaching traffic at a standstill. Sexton failed to control his speed and swerved to the left into oncoming traffic, hitting a Mack truck with a trailer head-on, according to DPS. Sexton was pronounced dead at the scene. The 54-year-old driver of the Mack truck was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital and was in stable condition, according to DPS. The crash occurred at 12:21 p.m., 5 miles west of Midland. Sexton was reported to be wearing a seatbelt. The driver of the Mack truck was not. What's up with Midland? Horseshoe Arena, Heart Energy Executive Oil Conference, November 15th through 16th. The Gifty Grinchmas Market, November 18th through 19th. Silver Spur Trade Show, November 19th through 20th. And Cardin International Circus, November 21st. La Hacienda Event Center, Gary Allen, November 18th. Grupo Arriesgado Los Tres de la Palma y Adolfo Urias, November 25th. Little Wood Rose, Drinksgiving, November 23rd. Midland Community Theater, A Christmas Carol, November 25th through 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, November 26th. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Puppy Pals Live from America's Got Talent, November 15th. Joe Bonamassa, The Guitar Event of the Year, November 16th. A Magical Cirque Christmas, November 20th, and Lindsay Sterling, Snow Waltz Tour, November 21st. Woody's Hideaway, FIFA World Cup Watch Party, all games start at 1 p.m. U.S. versus Wales, November 21st, Mexico versus Poland, November 22nd, USA versus England, November 25th, Mexico versus Argentina, November 26th, USA versus Iran, November 29th. Mexico versus Saudi Arabia, November 30th. Community Roundup. Upcoming meetings. Midland City Council, 10 a.m. Tuesday. Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland City Council. John Norman's meeting about Hogan Park, 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Midland Development Corporation, 9 a.m. Wednesday, MDC Boardroom, 200 North Lorraine Street, Suite 610. Midland Chamber of Commerce, State of Education Luncheon, 11 a.m. Wednesday, Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street. Tickets start at $60 for non-members. City Christmas Tree Lighting Parade Dates. The 2022 Community Tree Lighting will be held at 6:30 p.m. December 6th at Centennial Park. Bowie Fine Arts Academy Choir and the Midland High School Legend Carolers will perform. Santa will also be in attendance for pictures. Anyone can be Santa Lighted Christmas Parade presented by City of Midland Parks and Recreation Division will be held on December 10th beginning at 6:30 p.m. The parade will be held in downtown Midland, ending at Centennial Park. All floats must be registered with Parks and Recreation by the deadline date of December 8th. Registration forms can be found online at midlandtexas.gov/Christmas. Picked up at MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, or the Parks Office, 2701 West Elizabeth. Completed forms can be dropped off or mailed to the MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, Midland, Texas, 79705, or emailed to Joey Jolly at jajolly@midlandtexas.gov. Calendar. Hunt for Heroes Banquet, Tuesday, Bush Convention Center. State of Education on Wednesday, Bush Convention Center. 11th Annual Gingerbread Haven, December 6th, Horseshoe. 2022 Community Tree Lighting, 6:30 p.m., Centennial Park. Anyone Can Be Santa Lighted Christmas Parade, December 10th, downtown. City Collects Higher Sales Tax for 13th Straight Month, by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland collected its largest sales tax collection for a month of November. The city reported a check of $5,458,382, which was 18.01% greater than November 2021. The city also reported that 2 months into the fiscal year, 2022 through 23, that the city has collected $11,124,544, which is 30.71% higher than the first 2 months last fiscal year. November was the 13th straight month that the city reported a higher collection compared to the same month during the previous year. November was only the third month during that stretch that the city failed to show yearly growth of at least 20%. The city also reported that sales tax revenue this fiscal year is over budget by $1.615 million. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. November collection is based on September sales. The city's fiscal year runs from October through the following September. Midland ranks 16th for total employment at startups, by Ben Schaefer. Startup firms around the country employ 3.9% of the total labor market. In Midland, newly opened businesses employ 4.8% of the workforce, or 4,929 employees, according to a new study by HireAHelper.com. Midland ranks 16th out of small metro areas nationwide for the share of total employment at newly opened businesses, the study states. The Tall City ranks 15th among smaller metros for the share of total new businesses, 10.9% or 596 new businesses. Regardless of metro size, Midland ranks 35th nationally for share of total employment at startups. Texas is the fifth-ranked U.S. state in the same category, with 4.7% of the state's employees working at new businesses. There are 56,572 new businesses in Texas. Lucid sues Texas in attempt to overturn rules on dealerships, by James Ludden. Lucid Group Incorporated filed a federal lawsuit in Texas accusing the state's rules on auto dealership of economic protectionism that hurt the company's ability to sell its electric cars there. In a suit filed in Austin, Lucid said the state is acting anti-competitively, enforcing companies to sell their products through established dealerships. The Newark, California-based company, which markets its vehicles online and through a network of Lucid-owned studios, maintains that its direct sales and in-house after-sales service are so closely tied that using an independent franchised dealer would not be economically viable and would harm the business. That tight and fast feedback loop and the benefits it brings to Lucid customers would be impossible with third-party dealers interposed between Lucid and consumers, according to the plaintiff's statement. No one responded to an email request for comment at Lucid. The case comes as Lucid struggles to develop its business selling its high-end, plug-in air sedan, which currently retails for more than $100,000. The company has cut production targets twice this year, claiming more than 37,000 reservations for the sedan in the second quarter and delivering just 1,398 vehicles in the third. Lucid is testing out a similar legal strategy to one tried largely successfully by Tesla Incorporated in Michigan. After more than 3 years of litigation, the parties settled, and Michigan consumers can now buy Tesla vehicles and get them serviced there. Austin-based Tesla faces similar challenges in its home state and is unable to sell directly to Texans. The case is Lucid Group USA Incorporated versus Monique Johnston et al. In the U.S. District Court, Western District of Texas, Austin Division. Oil gets boost as China eases restrictions, by Mella McEwen. A weak oil market got an end-of-week boost from reports China, the world's second-largest economy, was throttling back on COVID restrictions. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange fell 3 of 5 trading days, including a 2.88-cent drop Tuesday and a $3.08 fall Wednesday before reversing course. WTI added $2.49, or 2.9% Friday, to end the week at $88.96 a barrel, down from $92.61 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed the week at $85.44 per barrel. Reflecting continued higher oil and natural gas prices, Haynes & Boone, LLP, the international law firm, said its fall 2022 Energy Bank Price Deck survey showed an increase in both oil and natural gas prices. The 23 banks responding to the survey had a base cap of $71.52 for oil prices, up from $67.34 in the spring survey. Likewise, the base case for natural gas at Henry Hub rose to $5.21 per MMBTU from $3.63 in the spring survey. Craig Earlham, senior market analyst, UK with Oanda, noted it was quite a volatile week as oil prices were buffeted by rumors about China's COVID response and a global economic outlook that seemingly changes daily. Today, it's the improvement in economic sentiment on the back of Thursday's inflation data, alongside a modest relaxation of Chinese quarantine measures that are lifting prices, he wrote in his company's daily e-newsletter. Natural gas prices on the New York Mercantile Exchange rode a price roller coaster for a second week, driven by storage injection data and weather reports. Prices at the Henry Hub opened the week with a 54-cent surge that pushed prices close to $7 per MCF, only to be followed by an 80-cent plunge that sent prices down near the $6.10 level. Prices fell a further 27 cents below $6 per MCF before adding 37 cents to near $6.25 per MCF. Gas prices fell 36 cents Friday to end the week at $5.88 per MCF. Still, the U.S. Energy Information Administration forecasts in its November short-term energy outlook that natural gas spot prices will average about $6.09 per MMBTU through the winter season ending next March, the highest level since the winter season of 2009 through 2010. The agency said its forecast reflects storage levels 4% below average heading into winter and rising demand for liquefied natural gas as the Freeport LNG facility comes back online. The EIA also predicted prices will decline next year after winter as production growth outpaces both consumption and LNG exports, averaging 5.46 cents per MMBTU for the year. Natural gas prices peaked at $8.80 per MMBTU before falling to an average $5.66 per MMBTU in October, amid strong production and consecutive weeks of large injections into storage. U.S. dry natural gas production has increased throughout the year, averaging more than 98 BCF per day monthly since June. The EIA expects production will continue to grow averaging 99.4 BCF this winter and 99.7 BCF in 2023. Biden tightens methane curbs on oil wells flaring, by Jennifer A. Dalawi. The Biden administration is strengthening its plan for limiting methane emissions from oil and gas wells after environmentalists panned an earlier version as too weak. The Environmental Protection Agency advanced the supplemental proposed rule on Friday, hours before President Joe Biden was set to tout U.S. efforts to fight climate change at the COP27 summit in Sharm el-Sheikh. The proposed regulation would require energy companies to do more to stifle leaks. The measure, which isn't set to be finalized until next year, responds to criticism by environmentalists by strengthening leak detection and repair requirements for small oil and gas wells and by establishing requirements for abandoned facilities. All well sites, regardless of their size, will be regularly monitored and checked for leaks, EPA Administrator Michael Regan told reporters at the UN conference in Egypt. Changes in the proposal would ensure regular inspections even at low-producing wells, which can be an outsized source of methane. And a newly proposed super emitter response program would require oil and gas companies to respond to credible third-party reports of high-volume methane leaks at their operations. That's an initiative that could empower activists who now use specialized and other technology to track methane plumes and venting wells unseen by the naked eye. The tightening up comes amid a surge of international action to quell emissions of methane, a particularly potent greenhouse gas estimated to be at least 80 times more powerful than carbon dioxide and warming the atmosphere during the first 20 years after it is released. The EPA estimated that in 2030, the proposal would reduce methane from covered sources by 87% below 2005 levels. Gas plunges after an unverified report on Freeport LNG circulates on Twitter, by Gerson Freitas, Jr. U.S. natural gas futures plunged as traders tried to make sense of an unconfirmed tweet on the state of the massive Freeport LNG export terminal in Texas that has been shut since a fire broke out in June. Gas futures for December delivery plunged as much as 7.4% on Friday after someone identifying themselves as a trader posted on Twitter that cracked pipes were discovered at the terminal, potentially delaying the company's plans to restart exports. The tweet, which has since been deleted, took off after being shared by another Twitter handle that is widely followed by gas traders and analysts. Shortly after the tweet, a letter falsely attributed to Freeport LNG circulated, stating that the report of the cracked pipes was false and that a part of the terminal would restart in the immediate future. This is not a legitimate statement from Freeport LNG, company spokesman Heather Brown said by email. The company reiterated in a statement later that it hadn't made a public statement on Friday regarding the restart of the terminal, but it didn't address the issues raised in the original tweet. If anything, the Twitter episode lays bare the challenges of verifying market-sensitive information on social media today and how extremely volatile natural gas markets have become with winter weather forecasts changing dramatically from one day to the next and more tankers full of U.S. gas bound for Europe. Saudi oil chief says OPEC will remain cautious with its oil production policies, by Will Kennedy and Salma El-Wardani. Saudi Arabia's energy minister said OPEC will remain cautious on oil production weeks after the group angered the U.S. by lowering output. The 23-nation alliance led by Riyadh and Russia is set to meet on December 4th to decide whether to cut production again, keep it stable, or reverse course and pump more. Members are looking at the state of the global economy and seeing plenty of uncertainties. Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman said, oil has dipped since June as central banks raise interest rates and China maintains its COVID zero strategy. But Brent is still above $95 a barrel and up 23% this year, with many traders concerned about supply shortages once the European Union effectively bans the import of Russian crude from next month. Our theme is being cautious, the minister said to Bloomberg TV at the COP27 Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. It's about being responsible and not losing sight of what the market requires. He cited last month's report from the International Monetary Fund that said the worst is yet to come for many economies. It's about recession, he said. I also see what central banks are saying and doing. China loosened some coronavirus restrictions on Friday, including cutting the amount of time travelers must spend in quarantine. The move boosted oil prices and Chinese stocks, but many analysts doubt there'll be a rapid reopening of the country. The jury is still out, Prince Abdulaziz said. The Chinese authorities are saying they are going to continue to be strict and diligent and follow the same regimentation that they have.
Harold Eugene Hicks. On Tuesday, November 8, 2022, Harold Eugene Hicks of Midland, Texas, passed away after a short illness. Harold is survived by his wife of 67 years, Jane Hicks, daughter Kathy Scott with her husband Tom, son Ben Hicks with his wife Deborah, and daughter Helen Ross with her husband David. He is also survived by three grandchildren, Matthew Hicks, Mallory Rogers, and Allie Neal, their families, and four nephews. He is predeceased in death by his father, James Benton Hicks, mother Gladys Hicks, brother J.B. Hicks Jr., and son Charles Michael Hicks. Friends and members of the community are invited to join the Hicks family for visitation on Friday, November 11, 2022, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home at 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland, Texas, and then for a celebration of life service on Saturday, November 12, 2022, at 10:30 a.m. at the First Baptist Church, held in the chapel at 2104 West Louisiana Avenue in Midland, Texas. Emmerderick Cheesy Cooks. Emmerderick Cheesy Cooks passed away unexpectedly on October 22, 2022, at the age of 15 in Dallas, Texas. Emmerderick was born on July 4, 2007, to Emma Spears and Frederick Cooks in Midland, Texas. Our family was not expecting the loss of Emmerderick or for his life to be cut so short so soon. We are devastated by this loss and will feel the absence of him forever. Cheesy was the sweetest, kindest, bubbliest, and most loving soul, and a joy to be around. Emmerderick will be forever missed. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, November 5th, 2022, at 1 p.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist, 303 East Shandon Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79705. Flowers can be sent to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home.
Obituaries. Barr Walton. Barr Walton Simmons, Pops, 73, of College Station, Texas, passed away on November 7, 2022, after a 30-year battle with heart disease. He was born on June 10, 1949, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to Daisy Barr Simmons and Delmar McAllister. Pops was preceded in death by his mother Daisy and his father John I. He is survived by his wife Nancy of College Station, sons John II, Brian Wade, and Taylor Reese, and his brother Kenneth McAllister. He is also survived by his eight wonderful grandchildren. Pops requested no services be held in his honor. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorial donations be sent to the Texas A&M Foundation, 401 George Bush Drive, College Station, Texas, 77840. Please designate gifts to the Barr W. Simmons, 71 Sol Ross Scholarship, in the memo line of the check. To donate online, go to https://www.txamfoundation.com /give.aspx. Select an unlisted account, which you enter manually, and enter Bar W. Simmons, 71 Sol Ross Scholarship in the text box. Edward Roy Tinsley III. Edward Roy Tinsley III of Santa Fe, New Mexico, passed away in the early morning of November 1, 2022, after fighting his 12-year battle with cancer. Ed is survived by his wife, Meredith George Tinsley, his son, Edward Roy Tinsley IV, his daughter, Edie Tinsley Booth, and his sisters, Carter Tinsley Shildnick and Keiki Tinsley. He also has three grandchildren. We will celebrate Ed's life at the Rio Doso Downs Racetrack Chapel on April 15, 2023. Please email at ede.booth@gmail.com for details of the service and celebration as the day gets closer. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Rio Doso Downs Racetrack Chapel, Post Office Box 449, Rio Doso Downs, New Mexico 88346. Lisa Waxman Abercrombie. Mrs. Lisa Waxman Abercrombie, age 44, went to her heavenly home with Jesus on November 8, 2022. A celebration of life will be held on Thursday, November 17, 2022 at 11 a.m. at New Hope Church in Abilene, Texas, with Pastor Chuck Farina officiating. There will be no visitation. Services are under the direction of Pearsall Funeral Directors, 733 Butternut Street in Abilene. Lisa was born in Midland, Texas, to Anton Waxman and Marilyn Weissman Waxman. She was preceded in death by her brother Chris Waxman. She leaves behind her husband Eric and four children, Alexander, Eliana, Lorianne, and Madeline, and loving parents Anton, AJ, and Marilyn. Please consider making a donation in Lisa's name to her favorite charity, Compassion International. Condolences may be offered to the family online at www.pbfuneraldirectors.com. Mariano Torres. Mariano Velasquez Torres, age 91, passed away peacefully surrounded by his children on Wednesday, November 9, 2022. He was born on February 10, 1931 in Presidio, Texas, to Antonio and Gertrudis Torres. He married his lifelong love, Berta Renteria, and they were married for 64 years before her death in 2014. Mariano was survived by his children, Olga Torres, Luz Rodriguez, Mario Torres, Javier Torres, Robert Torres, Orfa Torres, and Mark Torres. He is preceded in death by his wife, Berta Torres, parents Antonio and Gertrudis Torres, brothers Jose Candia, Alberto Torres, Ruben Torres, and Antonio Torres, his granddaughter Jennifer Torres, and great-granddaughter Jaslyn Ovalle. Funeral services were held at 10 o'clock on Monday. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit their website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Yolanda Aguirre. Yolanda Aguirre, 77, of Midland, passed away on November 8, 2022, at her residence in Midland, Texas. Yolanda was born in Piedra Negras, Coahuila, Mexico, to Rodolfo Bernal and Domingo Bernal on September 25, 1945. She married Jose Aguirre on November 30, 1966, in Midland, Texas. Yolanda was preceded in death by her father, Rodolfo Bernal, mother, Domingo Bernal, brothers Jose Armando Bernal and Feline Ralph Bernal, grandson, Jesse Jesus Aguirre Jr., great-grandson, Giovanni Jeremiah Salazar, grandson-in-law, Manuel Chavez. Yolanda is survived by Jose Aguirre, daughter Maria Aguirre, sons Jose Aguirre Jr. and Jesse Aguirre, brothers Antonio Gonzalez, Agapito Bernal, Juan Bernal, Gerardo Bernal, and Rudy Bernal, and sister Leticia Bernal, 10 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. A funeral mass will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, November 14, 2022, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, 1401 Garden Lane, Midland, Texas, with Deacon Ignacio Villa officiating. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens, 6800 South State Highway 349, Midland, Texas. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Dorothy Repke. Dorothy Repke, 99, of Midland, passed away November 10, 2022. There is no service planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Jesse Paul Younger. Jesse Paul Younger, 39, of Midland, passed away on Monday, November 7, 2022. A memorial service was held on November 12. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit their website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, November 12th. Bond committee appointments in process. Special ed backlog a challenge. Appointing a bond committee and the need for special education diagnosticians were the main topics tackled by Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray during his media call on Thursday. The ECISD Board of Trustees is in the process of appointing a bond committee for a potential November 2023 bond issue. We would like to put a committee together. Our board is currently in the process of doing that. We are seeking parents, so we'll have a parent representative from every school in the district, as well as a staff representative from every school, multiple individuals from central office from each of the different departments and divisions, as well as community members, Mary said. Our board is busy right now seeking those community members that may be interested in serving. So if that's you, if you're interested in serving on the board committee, you may reach out to any of the ECISD board trustees. Their contact information, both telephone and email, can be found on the ECISD website. On special education, Murray said there is a statewide backlog on testing due to the lack of diagnosticians. Diagnosticians, he said, are individuals that oversee the testing process. In our state right now, we have a backlog. Specifically in our area, we staffed up those positions several years ago and currently have a diagnostician pipeline. We have five individuals that are currently in that pipeline. We are funding their education so they can be diagnosticians. That is one of the investments we made using our ESSER, or Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Money, so that we can have enough of those individuals in place to work with any of our students that are identified for potential special education testing, Murray said. ECISD is currently outsourcing diagnosticians, but Murray didn't have information on what company, how many diagnosticians were brought in, or how much they cost. Again, our challenge is our state, is we don't have enough of those individuals. I will even go back to my last school district. We had the same challenges in that district as well. This is just a position that is difficult to find. That's why we are very focused on developing and cultivating those individuals within our organization. It's hard to staff area in public school education right now, he added. He said there are some companies that provide access to diagnosticians, but the rules are pretty specific. These individuals have to be Texas certified, if you will, so individuals from a Texas perspective, Murray said. Anytime you outsource, he said, you're typically paying a bit more. There aren't necessarily age timelines for testing. Once a student is recommended for testing, the clock begins. But there's a pretty lengthy period of time for all of the testing to occur. It's up to a year. It's a healthy window of time, Murray said. Testing helps parents know any type of disability that a child may or may not have. But in the short term, if a child is struggling in school, that conversation is between mother and father and teacher to work and support that child in whatever ways that need to happen. So regardless of testing timelines or the process of testing, we as educators have to meet the needs of those children today. If a child is struggling today, our responsibility is to address those concerns today, regardless of what testing might say. We don't wait on that. That happens immediately, Mary said. During a November 8th workshop, the board heard a presentation on the district's quest to earn the Trusted Learning Environment Seal. This is the nation's only privacy framework designed specifically for school systems. Mary said cybersecurity at ECISD doesn't involve a lot of people, but it does involve a lot of equipment. Most of our monitoring actually takes place using software applications that monitor our network. Anytime we notice an anomaly, that software application notifies one of our technology engineers. We have one individual that's responsible for the overarching piece of cybersecurity in our system, but we have a team of individuals that work collectively to make sure we maintain a safe and secure environment. So again, the monitoring is typically done by our software application that simply alerts us if there happens to be a breach or any kind of vulnerability in the network. In the case of a breach, if it's something that can easily be addressed, ECISD's technicians take care of it pretty quickly from school or home. The nice thing about our network and technology is our technicians don't physically have to be present to address any of the needs that we may have. So a technician would be alerted from wherever they happen to be, using whatever device they would have access to, they would be able to address that concern. If it is a larger breach, or the concern cannot be addressed by one of our technicians, then we do have contractors as part of the relationships we have with the different vendors to provide technical assistance and support should we need that in the future, Mary said. But we are pretty quick to respond to any type of breach as our software that monitors our network alerts us to anything that may be problematic. As for who would want that information, Mary said, there are a lot of people in the world, not just the U.S., seeking information from everyone. Typically, they want social security numbers, they want birthdays. For adults, they want credit card information, banking information. That's the type of information many times our illicit individuals are seeking information that they can use to create bank accounts information, that they can use to create online personalities, if you will, so they can have access to money, have access to information. But that's primarily social security numbers, banking information, birth dates, and we maintain that information so we have responsibility to make sure it stays safe, Mary said. He added that ECISD provides a lot of professional development for its technicians to make sure they are kept up to speed on the latest information, software, and vulnerabilities. Cyber warriors are always improving their ability to infiltrate a network. It's important that our own team stays up to date on the information that is available, so we make sure we provide regular professional development for them in whatever manner we may deem necessary. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 12th. Santa to make grand entrance at Music City Mall next week. It's a tradition that marks the start of the holiday season at Music City Mall, and this year it returns with no restraints from the pandemic. This year, Santa Claus will make his grand entrance to the Music City Mall next week by landing in the parking lot via helicopter for the annual family holiday tradition. The event will take place November 19th in the Northwest parking lot at Music City Mall. The festivities will begin at 9 a.m. before Santa arrives at 10:30. We're super excited for this year's event, MCM General Manager Greg Morgan said. This is the first year since the pandemic where largely the COVID concerns have gone away. Last year, there was still a little bit of worry. This year, we're just really excited to see everyone back out and partake in something that we've been able to maintain annually. It's just wonderful. The festivities will include bounce houses, music, characters, video games, refreshments from the Odessa Chuckwagon Gang, and more. The pre-landing festivities also include a special performance from the Compass Academy Charter School Choir. AeroCare is donating flight time for Father Christmas. The event is free for everyone to attend. We'll have bounce houses as long as the wind doesn't blow, Morgan said. Right now, it's looking pretty good for that. We have the Chuck Wagon Gang. They'll be serving hot chocolate. One of the new tenants at the mall is Cinnabon, which Morgan says will have their Bon Bites over at the event. We've worked out a deal to bring awareness that they're here at the mall, Morgan said. We've got hip-hop and dance groups. Following Santa's arrival, guests can watch the L.A. Roller Girls Christmas Spectacular. This is the second consecutive year that will feature the live roller skate show. We have many choir singing and roller girls will be here, Morgan said. They're a big group. They were here last year. They were so well attended last year that we wanted to make sure we brought them back for this year's event as well. In addition to that, you have the big man flying in on the helicopter. He will land at 10:30. Then we'll bring him into the roller rink. He'll wave at everyone and kick off the show with the L.A. Roller Girls. The L.A. Roller Girls will perform a 30 to 40 minute performance. It's almost like you would see Olympic skaters do, except they're on roller skates. It's really neat. The skate show is scheduled to start around 11. Santa will be on set at Dillard's Court to begin holiday photos directly after. The Roller Girls are back after popular demand from last year's event. It's one of the unique ways to introduce Santa Claus, and Morgan said the mall is proud to continue to do this tradition. I love doing it, Morgan said. We like to do things big and grand here. It's not without its logistical challenges. We have to get a pilot and a helicopter. AeroCare has been so good to provide us with a helicopter. We have to watch the forecast. Low clouds can affect it, but we're looking at the forecast and everything is looking good for us. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 12th. City sales tax up more than 7%. The City of Odessa's November sales tax check, which reflects sales made in September, was up 7.4% compared to last year at this time. According to a City of Odessa news release, the city received a check of almost $6 million. This amount includes the economic development sales tax of 0.25 cents. The City of Odessa will receive $4.7 million, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive almost $1.2 million. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 22-23 is up almost 30%, or just over $2 million, as compared to the budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. In addition, the 22-23 year-to-date amount is above the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $1.4 million, or almost 18%. The city has budgeted $44 million in net sales tax revenue for this current fiscal year. According to Medical Center Hospital, the hospital district is scheduled to receive just over $5 million in sales tax this month. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 12th. Couple suing over digging error. An Odessa couple has filed a lawsuit against a Midland construction company alleging its employees mistakenly dug up their property to build an O'Reilly's Auto Parts. According to the lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court, Red Deer Construction removed trees, fences, and gates on Jose and Felisa Estrada's South Texas Avenue property in November of 2020. The company also cleared land and installed sewer taps, sewage lines, and other plumbing subground level items, the suit stated. The Estrada's attorney, Caleb Stewart, alleges Red Deer was sent a demand letter, but they didn't respond, so now the Estradas have had to hire their own contractor to remove all of the items before they can begin to build their own home. Plaintiffs have been forced to live with various friends as they are unable to build a home on their property, the lawsuit states. At this juncture, it is necessary for the plaintiffs to immediately put their time, energy, and financial resources into repairing the remnant of their property. So far, the Estradas have spent more than $13,000 to remedy the situation and are seeking a judgment of more than $119,000, according to the lawsuit. Red Deer Construction didn't return a phone call seeking comment. Wreck claims life of Kentucky man. A 23-year-old Kentucky resident was killed Wednesday afternoon in a two-vehicle crash on FM 1788 in Midland. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Gavin Sexton of Jenkins, Kentucky, was traveling north on FM 1788 in a Nissan Altima when traffic came to a halt 5 miles west of Midland around 12:20 p.m. Sexton failed to control his speed, swerved into oncoming traffic, and hit a Mack truck with trailer head-on, DPS stated in a news release. The driver of the truck, a 54-year-old man from Midland, was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital in stable condition. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, November 12th. Three Midland Christian administrators indicted. CBS 7 has reported that three former Midland Christian School administrators were indicted by a grand jury Thursday morning. Dana Ellis, Jared Lee, and Matthew Counts were three of the five MCS administrators that were originally arrested and charged in February with failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse, the station reported. According to the indictment, Ellis, Lee, and Counts have been indicted for failure to make a required child abuse report after an incident that occurred in November of 2021. This is a separate incident from the original arrest back in February pertaining to alleged abuse that occurred in January 2022. According to Counts' attorney, Jeff Paris, the incident in November involved a teenage student in a Midland Christian School classroom being struck in the head accidentally. According to CBS 7, Paris has also released a statement saying, neither Matt Counts nor the other two educators charged today saw the student at all that day and were only later made aware of the incident. Their only commonality is that they are plaintiffs in a lawsuit against the city and Midland Police Department personnel. All three have posted a bond of $5,000.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.